Jim Taylor back on WRMJ, WRMJ.com. Always great to get an audience with IHSA Executive Director Craig Anderson. The IHSA board meeting this week and a couple items I wanted to get reaction to. We'll start with just, and I'll read the item on the release. The IHSA board approving a recommendation to form a new IHSA advisory committee whose aim will be to share perspective between public schools and non-boundary schools in hopes of shaping future IHSA policy and rules that provides greater equity to both. All right, Craig Anderson, go. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so that really came about as a result of some suburban and Chicago area public and private schools forming a committee very similarly during, right in preparation for our bylaw amendment proposal process. Dan Tully from our board was a part of that, and they really were able to have conversations about on both sides of, the public side and the non-boundary side of, how they're navigating, and really had it really benefited that open discussion. And so that group recommended that maybe the IHSA do a little broader. And so we'll expand that conversation, obviously, in different regions of the state with equal numbers of public schools as well as non-boundary schools, and really have some open dialogue about bylaw amendment proposals that could come about, and IHSA policies, and really just trying to, let both groups see both sides of, the challenges that both groups face. And that's really what we hope to get out of that.
So right now, as it relates to non-boundary schools, we deal with a multiplier and a success factor. Do you want to elaborate or enumerate on those two items?
Yeah, we're one of the few states in the country that do navigate with both, and that really just happened over time. We had a bylaw that instituted a multiplier, and then we instituted a multiplier waiver, where depending upon the success of non-boundary school programs, they could be waived of the multiplier. And years ago, there was interest brought to the board from the membership about, those that showed significant success should maybe have a success factor. And so we ended up with both, and we've navigated that. COVID put a little wrinkle in that, and that many non-boundary schools benefited from not having championships because many schools received a multiplier waiver than maybe they ordinarily would have had we had state series. So we're moving into a new two-year cycle where we have 2 years of history of state series success for the non-boundary schools. So in the previous two school years, we had no schools that were success factored. We're going to see a few non-boundary schools be success factored in over the next 2 years. And likewise, more schools will have the multiplier because we have 2 years of state series history of success that will have more be multiplied as opposed to receiving a waiver. So, we are unique in that we have both, but they, each kind of do their own thing in regards to trying to move non-boundary schools into their appropriate classification.
So and this is a reaction that sometimes you see in the social media stratosphere. If there's whatever, six of eight schools or non-boundary schools that are in the final eight of whatever sport, you pick whatever sport it is, and lo and behold, there's an argument, or somebody will say, well, there should be separate state tournaments for public schools and non-boundary schools. So I ask the question, would you ever envision something that like that happening under the auspices of the IHSA?
I frankly hope not. And I think from the board level and the leadership group that we have, I think there's a common thought that we are better together and we can serve our students at our high schools better when we work together. And so really, this advisory committee that's been created is just another piece of that element to try to make sure we continue to work together and navigate if there should be policy adjustments or classification adjustments, multiplier success factor adjustments, that we do that collectively and in, you know, the best for both our boundaried and our non-boundaried schools. So I hope that I don't see a day where we're separate, because I think, you know, that there's disadvantages to that for both groups. And we're much better, I believe, when we work together and we conduct championships together. There's always going to be a question of is one side or the other getting an advantage over the other. And I don't know that we'll ever reach a period of time where, you know, everybody's going to equally agree that we've reached a fair spot. If that was the case, we would have done it a long time ago. But, you know, we just try to do what's best for both. And again, want to see both our groups of schools, boundary and non-boundary schools, work together.
So this is an advisory committee we're talking about. So they'll eventually, I'm assuming, have some type of recommendation for the IHSA board to consider. So as you say, it's about trying to develop kind of the fairest thing you can present. Do you have an idea what that potentially could be?
You know, I really don't. I mean, we're going to take a look at over these next 2 years. We've modified a number of times over, you know, decades, little modifications to both multiplier and success factor and the waiver. And so I really hope over the next 2 years, when we've got these last 2 years of state series play, that we'll be in a position to really take a closer look at, you know, are there advantages one versus the other, and what classification movements there are. So I think we just need to have this advisory committee kind of analyze that over this past school year. Our board and has been made available to our membership to review state series success. We've looked over it over a period of time. We knew these last two school years, as COVID didn't allow a season of sports to be conducted, a state series season, we were going to have more private schools have more success because no success factor, and there was relief from the waiver for many schools, relief from the multiplier. So, it's a difficult balance, of course, but we're hopeful that there are some outcomes and will be and see some balance of the number of non-boundary versus boundary schools that are having success in the various classes.
And I'm assuming whatever the recommendation is from the advisory committee, it's going to be, you know, it's going to have to be across the board. Now, I understand there'll probably be some nuances, because some classes are, some sports are four classes, some sports are three classes. Football, of course, is the eight classes. So other than those nuances, everything else, I mean, whatever policy is developed, it's going to be across the board. It's not going to be, well, it's for this sport, but not this sport.
Yeah, and that's the way the current policies are in place, that has application broadly. And I would agree. I do not see that changing. I think we'll stay with whatever policies, success factor, multiplier, waivers thereof, will stay consistent across all of our sports in the Scholastic Bowl, which is multiple class activity. But I think we're going to stay consistent, and it's unlikely that we'll see something that goes uniquely to one particular sport.
All right. Any before we change directions, anything else you need to mention about this issue?
No, I don't think so.
All right. Speaking with Craig Anderson, IHSA Executive Director, the IHSA board meeting this week. They don't meet in July, so they'll meet again in August once the school year resumes. Now, the other issue I wanted to get reaction to today, the board approving a recommendation to update the IHSA's transgender policy based upon a new Illinois law related to birth certificates that was passed in March. Now, when I read this, I'm going to give like a thumbnail sketch, and people can see the updated policy. It's available at IHSA.org. So it says, if a student has a gender identity that is different than the sex assigned to the student at birth as reflected on the student's initial birth certificate, the student or parent shall contact the school administrator or athletic director at their member school, notifying them of said difference and that the student wishes to participate in athletics and activities in a manner consistent with their gender identity. Now, they have to provide documentation. Then the member school offers basically a determination, and then that's forwarded to the IHSA to make the final decision. And then if the IHSA would turn that down, then there is an appeals process. And all this is subject to various forms of documentation. Am I kind of getting that right? I mean, the quick thumbnail sketch of that's how this would work?
Yeah, you have that right. That's exactly how it's worked so far to date. And additionally, you know, the modification of the language simply is to make sure that we're referencing the birth certificate for the student at birth. And that's a result of, as you mentioned, the new law that's going to go into place, passed in March, going into effect July 1st, that new law is going to make it much easier for anyone to go get a birth certificate change. And we just wanted the policy to reflect what I believe our membership understands, a review process for approving transgender student participation. So it was simply a result of anyone being able to much more freely get a birth certificate change. And so to review students' birth gender at birth to determine whether or not a ruling is necessary from our office. The policy has been in place for over a decade, and I've, in my time as the executive director and Dr. Hickman before me, we've reviewed and made determinations about students' participation in the gender they identify, and a significant number. And so that's been ongoing. I have very recently had, I think, just one or two that have been brought to my attention where they were able to secure a birth certificate change. And so the previous language didn't always reference that would require a ruling from our office. And so that's therefore the impetus for the change in the language. But absolutely, we've made a number of decisions. I have in my role as the executive director and have the responsibility to review those, made a number of decisions about students and their participation, and in many instances provided opportunities for students to participate in the gender they identify. The changes that we're going to base a decision on when a ruling is necessary from our office is when a student's identifying in a gender that's different than they were at birth, what was on their original birth certificate. That's when it would trigger a request from our office for approval to participate in the gender they identify.
And again, just to clarify for our listening audience, again, all this is spelled out. I don't want to go down every bullet point here, but all of this is spelled out in the policy, and you can get that at IHSA.org. All right, the only other thing I wanted to ask you about, we've talked about it a couple of times with Craig Anderson, the state tournament schedule for basketball. It looks like potentially you could make some type of decision maybe in August or September. Is there anything you can share in terms of what those considerations may be?
Yeah, the Basketball Advisory Committee got together and proposed a couple of ideas. There's parts of both. They presented two options for the board to consider. The board didn't land on one or the other specifically, and so they've asked us to further review possibilities. The detail was very limited. They just kind of put together where they thought by day games could be played. And so we're going to dive in a little deeper and actually identify sessions, game times, breaks in sessions, and that kind of thing, so the board would have a better understanding of where anticipated times of games, in particular games in a day, would be before they make a final decision. It should be known that when we created contracts with our state final venues, both girls and boys state finals, that we had a three-year contract. And so that third year of the contract is coming up in the 23-24 school year. So the changes that we're talking about moving to wouldn't go in place into the 25 championship year. So it's when we would go to renew a contract or potentially put it out for bid that we would have a new established board approved schedule that we could take to those hosts to then be able to navigate and make a proposal back to host under those parameters. So nothing, I think what came out of the board meeting yesterday was that there will be no changes to the schedule for this coming 23-24 school year, but we are looking at potential changes when we have a renewal in a contract at both of our state final venues for girls and for boys.
So I know at one time we talked earlier in the school year, the 2022-2023 school year, of maybe adding a day. Is that a possibility, or are you still looking at just a three-day setup?
No, I think that assuming that as we talk to right now, SEFCU Arena and State Farm Center, if those appear to be options for those hosts, that may be something we consider, but we need to discover if that possibility exists for them. And then if we can find a time schedule and a schedule of games that makes sense to move, and whatever the number of games are into that earlier day. But that's still to be navigated, a lot of discussion to be had. We want to look at first what the Basketball Advisory Committee recommended, which was just continue to be a three-day format with a slight modification in the days. And that's also available from our website if folks want to go look at what was proposed. So we'll later determine, maybe later this fall, if in fact that additional day starting on a Wednesday evening is even a possibility.
All right, Craig Anderson, IHSA Executive Director, go enjoy summer vacation now, okay?
I plan on it. You too. Thanks, Jim.
All right, good to visit with Craig Anderson, IHSA Executive Director. He joins us on WRMJ.